Okay, Parshas Lech Lecha has a lot to teach us, and a lot to teach us in the first Aliyah, and a lot to teach us in what it begins, in the story of Avraham Avinu. I guess it's appropriate that we are doing this the same day as our midterm experience, because to whatever extent we fret about Bechinas in life, in school, and in the academic world, we know there are much bigger tests and nisyonos that confront us throughout life, and Avraham Avinu is the master of nisyonos. Avraham Avinu, as we know, our tradition has it that he passed 10 nisyonos, and we're about to read about some of them, we're about to not read about some of them are between the lines, some of them are next week, but the theme of nisyonos and Avraham Avinu's experience through them is very much the topic of where we turn our attention now, this week, and next week. And, of course, the question of why the nisyonos exist, and if there's any one answer to that question, why nisyonos exist, is a constant one. Clearly, it's not in the traditional sense that, as the Rambam emphasizes in the Mar Nevuchim, it's not like God doesn't know. So it's not comparable to a teacher who has to find out what the student knows and doesn't know, or how well the student understands. That's not what happens in these nisyonos. The Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what the answers to the questions are. It's clearly other purposes. Some understand that it's a sense of compliment. It's a way of displaying what we're capable of, whether it's to ourselves or to others. Some understand that it's simply a kapara. It's an experience to go through in order to bring about an atonement. Others say more positively that it's to help make us stronger and to help make us more experienced, just like in modern Hebrew we refer to an experienced person as a bal nisayon. And you know that does contribute to one's strength and ability to persevere. Rav Huttner, in a letter, Zigros and Kuf Chav Ches, is often quoted as having observed that when the Pasuk says in Mishle, Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'kam, that a Tzadik falls down seven times and he gets back up, the intent of the Pasuk is not to say that despite the fact that he fell down seven times, he still gets up again. He's a Tzadik because he gets up each time and he's stronger each time. The experience makes you into somebody different. But the idea of a nisayon also represents, and this is a theme that the Rosh Yeshiva of Karen Biavna emphasized, that others emphasized, that until a person is put through the nisayon, so whatever abilities they may have in potential are dormant and are not actually theirs. They're not actually midos and attributes that they have acquired. They are potential. So many say this, but I'm about to emphasize the framing that the Rashi of Karen Biavner of Goldbach brought to the context. And Goldbach would note that the idea of acquiring something for yourself is a crucial value in life. And he would explain differently than it's conventionally explained when the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Ezehu Ashir HaSameach B'Chalko, that's not a reference to being content with what you have. It's a reference to being able to rejoice, be able to be sameach b'chelko, with that which one has actually acquired. And it's true about material possessions, that a person feels much more satisfaction with that which he has earned rather than that which is just given to him or belongs to somebody else. But it's true also about your inner attributes, that when you have actually brought them to the forefront through your own experience and through your own interaction with the nisyonos of life, so that is a far more genuine sense of ownership. The mida is real, and therefore a nisayon is the process of one creating himself, not just having attributes that are there in potential, but that are actually a part of who the person is. And in that sense, in the Sefer Chasidus and elsewhere, says that's really the name of the parsha, Lech Lecha, the this interesting phenomenon of two words that are spelled identically but really aren't otherwise related. So lech lecha, go to yourself. And that yourself represents the actual that can be, the potential that is there. So go to that. Go to who you can become. Go to yourself, fulfill your potential. And that's essentially the message of the parsha. There's a very nice sikha about this by a member of my extended family, sort of, Rabbi Eliezer Geltzeller, Zichrono Livracha, sikhos that were published, the sefer called Sichos Eliezer, where he notes, you know, the inverse of this, it's not just that you acquire your attributes through standing up to the Nisoyon, but if one would fall short, so then the potential could disappear. It's a sense of use it or lose it. We don't assume that one's potential that's not actualized just remains there forever, just waiting to be called on at some later date. If the opportunity isn't captured, so then the potential gets lost. And that's a crucial idea to be aware of also when we confront the Nisyonos. And also to appreciate, again in the sense of Lech Lecha, as he emphasizes, that every individual has their own Nisyonos. And so often we feel that, oh, if we had somebody else's circumstances, we had somebody else's conditions, so then we'd be able to be great. And we fail to appreciate that our greatness comes through the specific circumstances that we confront. There's a muscle there. It says, imagine somebody is chopping down a tree, and he has a regular metal axe while he's chopping down the tree, and it's taking a while. And he thinks, oh, if only I had a golden axe, this would go really quickly. And he doesn't appreciate that a golden axe is not going to cut down the tree any faster. Gold is actually softer. The axe is going to bend before the tree is going to bend. And he just has this image in his mind that if he had this particular kli, this would be a more effective endeavor. And really it's the opposite, that it's specifically this kli that you have, which is what it takes in order to accomplish this goal. And that's what this calls for. And when that's appreciated, so then a person has the ability to really stand up to the Nisayan and make something out of the circumstance and out of themselves. And this idea that it's about a personal kinyan, so you know, we also find later on in the parsha that Avraham asks, how will I know that my descendants will actually inherit the land? And it's outside of our scope of the first Aliyah right now, so we're not going to discuss that so much. But the Maharal understood that his question was, how can it be that my descendants are going to be able to inherit all this without their own personal kinyan, that they need something also in order to make it theirs, and that was the nature of the question. So within this idea of an Nisayon, so we understand that this first opening pasuk of Parshas Lech Lecha is itself a Nisayon. Right away, we jump into a Nisayon. The Medrash introduces Lech Lecha as a Nisayon. There's different opinions as to how to count it. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us that Avraham Avinu withstood 10 Nisyonos. It's not clear how to count them, and Rishonim have different ways. According to the Rambam, this is the first of his Nisyonos. According to Rabbeinu Yonah and the Miri, they're all commenting over there in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, this is the second of the Nisyonos. According to Birkei Avos, it's the third. It's in Pirkei Avos, you can find it. But the idea that it's among the Nisyonos is clearly agreed. But what's perhaps not so obvious and is surprising is that there is a discussion in the Medrash that this may even be a greater Nisayon than the more famous one that we'll read about next week. And that idea, it's not necessarily the Maskana of the Medrash, this is a Reb Levi statement in the Medrash Rabbah, that we find here Lech Lecha, and we find also in the end of next week's parsha, in the famous Nisayon, what we assume to be the ultimate Nisayon, both in chronological order and in its character, the Nisayon of the Akedah. So there also, Kadosh Baruch Hu instructs Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha, that you should go, Lech Lecha al Har HaMoriah. So El Eretz Samaria, Lech Lecha El Eretz Samaria. So Medrash has the comparison. We have Lech Lecha here. We have Lech Lecha El Eretz Samaria. Says Rav Levi, I don't know which one is more. I don't know which Nisayin is great. That's a pretty amazing idea. That one would think that the Nisayin of coming close to having to sacrifice your son, that would be clearly the greater Nisayin. And here we find the opposite. We find that the purpose of this Nisayin, Rashi tells us right away, the first words of Rashi in the Parsha, Lech lecha lahanoscha l'tovoscha, that you should go and it's going to be good for you. So if somebody tells you, take a trip and it's going to be amazing, you're going to have a fantastic experience, and you listen, that's a Nisayin that can compete with the Nisayin of the Akedah, somebody telling you to sacrifice your child. So there are various approaches as to why this Nisayin was Nisayin at all and why it was Nisayin that could compete with the Akedah. And some suggest that here the nature of the Nisayin was to be able to do it for the right reasons, despite the fact that it was Lahanascha L'Tavascha, then it was something you should appreciate, was a shlichus for its higher purpose, and not just because it's going to work out better. Others suggest that the Nisayin here was greater because it's going to be an ongoing day-to-day challenge. It's not like the one-time flashy experience of the moment of the Akedah, but this is a lifetime of Nisyonos, and therefore that's more significant. In fact, the Maral suggests that's why the Torah doesn't even want to focus on one of the other Nisyonos that we would think is very primary in the whole history, the Kivshan Shalesh, which the Torah doesn't spell out at all. It's a whole question why that is. The Maral says that's not really what's relevant for us to learn from. We're looking to learn from Avraham Avinu, we're looking to learn from his constant life, not from these more focused one-time experiences. We could also say that the idea of seeing this as an Nisayon is that when we talk about the concept of an Nisayon, another perspective, if you want to focus maybe a little bit in a more targeted way, that an Nisayon is not just about what steps will you take, but it relates to one's emuna. So, for example, if we look to the experience of the Akedah, so in addition to the question of will Avraham Avinu carry out the instruction, but the Nisayon also involves how could he continue to believe in God's promise, that God said that I promise you, you're going to have a tremendous nation of descendants that come specifically from this child, from Yitzchak, not from anyone else, not from Yishmael. So once you have that promise, and now it looks very likely like Yitzchak is going to be slaughtered before he has any children of his own, so the question is, how can you still believe it's going to work out? How can you still have emunah that there is potential here? So that requires a phenomenal degree of emunah, and perhaps that's a part of the role this plays in the Rosh Hashanah davening as well, that we read this laning on Rosh Hashanah. So perhaps to bring that over here, so here God says, get up and go, lahanascha l'tavascha, go for your own benefit. So very often we have a very specific image in our mind of what our plan is and how we're going to succeed. And if we follow steps A, B, and C, so everything will go well. And when things go off course and it's not the plan, we can't see how that can actually be what's better for us. And we think, okay, you know, get us back on track. That's where we'll have the hatzlacha that we're meant to have. And it can be a tremendous nisayon in emuna to be able to appreciate that, no, it's this unpredictable path, this unforeseen path that actually is going to be the one that is going to bring great bracha. And that's a part of what needs to be appreciated, maybe why this is a Nisayon that has a tremendous weight to it in and of itself. And to go back to the Akedah for a second also, I think another theme of the Akedah, clearly the end plan for the Akedah was not for Yitzchak to be sacrificed. And one could argue that the point of the whole process of the Akedah was that here you have Avram Avinu is the figure of Chesed, and clearly that's what he's supposed to be. And his mission is to discover and model and teach Chesed for the world. But sometimes people would follow a path of Chesed because it's simply more pleasant. It's nicer. They don't have the personality to be a more aggressive, child-sacrificing religionist. And on the one hand, Avram's got the correct path. That is our path. We're not about child sacrifice. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is displaying here that it's not only because it's the easier path, not only because it's the more pleasant path. Sometimes it's very hard to be a Baal Chesed. Sometimes it doesn't always seem like that's the more pleasant path to take. And Avraham Avinu is modeling this path with all of the commitment and with all of the willingness to self-sacrifice of those who take the opposite kind of a vision of what their religion is about. And that's very much a theme that one can find within the Akedah. And so here also that the idea that whatever it is that ultimately is going to bring one's hana and one's tova, as the Rashi indicates, is not always the easier path or the more natural path. And sometimes that requires a tremendous amount of self-control or a tremendous amount of imposing initiative on one's default mode. And that's also reflected in this particular Nisayon of Lech Lecha. So there's a lot more to say about this, but maybe we'll sprinkle it through some of the psukim just to be able to have some time to see what is inside the psukim themselves. But one more comment before. So essentially, we could parallel this to last week's parsha. This is essentially Avram's introduction onto the scene. He's mentioned at the end of last week's parsha, but now is where he really gets launched, which essentially parallels last week, that Noach is mentioned in the end of Bereishis, but really gets launched in the beginning of Parshas Noach. So we have a kind of a similar structure here with Avram. And one could ask, so why does Avram not get the same whole hesped while he was alive that Noach got? Get the whole speech. Noach is treated with such glowing terms. And we spoke about that last week, about how it's very much in contrast with the way the Torah Shebaal Peh talks about Noach. So how come Avram Avinu doesn't get that honor also? How come we don't have a speech about how fantastic Avram is? And we know that that was the case, and we're going to see more about that later. Maybe that's part of the answer. How come we don't find an introduction here to how great Avram was? So this is something that Rav David Tzvi Hoffman and others talk about. He suggests that Avram's Sitkus was so well known, everyone knew the story with him, there wasn't any need to say anything more, and later on we'll hear more about him. But maybe we could suggest, just to kind of flesh out what we discussed last week, we talked about how when it comes to Noach, the Torah is very glowing, but the Torah Shebaal Peh is much more ambivalent about him, it is much more watered down, and we find a lot of criticism, and we talked about that. Why is it Noach can't catch a break? And we talked about what the attributes of Noach seem to be that led to him not being as much of a role model as he could have been. So one could ask, I don't think we mentioned this last week, one could ask, so okay, so fine, so Noach was whoever he was, but so why is there this disconnect? Why does the Torah present it in such glowing terms, and we need Chazal to come and tell us, not so much, it wasn't so great. So perhaps this reflects what we often find is the difference sometimes between the Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. That the Torah Shebichsav is telling us what could have been or what was in potential, and the Torah Shebaal Peh is saying what actually happened instead. Like, for example, many explain why does the Torah say ayin tachas ayin, an eye for an eye, and we have the Masorah that it doesn't actually mean that. It means that you pay financial retribution, as we talked about last year in Bava Kamma. So why does the Torah not just say that? Why does it say ayin tachas ayin? Some explain, because it's meant to convey that theoretically that would have been appropriate, that it should have been an eye for an eye, but in real life, is handled differently. So too, perhaps the Torah is conveying that Noach really could have been something much more than he was. He really had the potential, and he had the ability to really affect others in a way that he didn't really try to do or succeed at doing. And therefore, we have that contrast between the way the Torah is painting the picture and the way Chazal explained what actually happened. So perhaps in the case of Avram, it's not the message. We don't need to do that. We don't need to first say, oh, here's what Avram could have been, but didn't really happen, because Avram did much more to actualize who he could have been, and we'll hear about that soon enough, and that's also a part of the approach. Hi.
Maybe you could say, if I care, in the other direction, that Avram could have been Sam, could have been someone that didn't deserve an introduction, but he actualized his potential, and he potentially could have been...
And therefore we don't spell out the introduction.
Right.
Okay, could be. So here, in terms of when this instruction is happening, just to mention, Machlokas Rishonim, when this was said, some Rishonim say this was before he came to Haran, when he's still in Ur Kasdim. Some say this was after he came to Haran. Some say there were actually two instructions. It's a discussion of Ein Mukdam Ocher B'Torah. Okay, so that's a technical discussion. What's the significance of Lecha here? Lech Lecha. So we mentioned already one possible explanation, Al Piderech Hadrosh, that it's about going to your potential, go to yourself. There are other interpretations also. The Barbanel says it means go by yourself. You don't go with your family. This is just for you. The Ralbag says a little differently, that it means that you could go with them. That would be good. But even if they don't come with you, you should be ready to go by yourself. And other Rishonim say it doesn't need an explanation. This is just normal language. This is just a way of talking. It doesn't have to be any particular significance to the language of Lecha. But there is a Medrash, has a whole other comment here. The Medrash says, that opens up a halachic discussion. The Medrash says, Lecha, Lecha ani paiter mikibud av eim, and not others. That apparently, if he is going to leave his family behind, so he's not going to be taking care of his aging father, and he's going to go to Eretz Yisrael, so the suggestion here in the Medrash is you're pater, but others aren't pater. So this touches upon, which was a major discussion in Poskim, and a very frequent real-life situation, what if somebody wants to make Aliyah, and he has parents who live in Chutz La'aretz, and the parents need help, they need attention. So is he permitted to make Aliyah, or is he obligated to stay in proximity to his parents? Or what if he's already living in Eretz Yisrael and he hears that his parents need help in Chutz La'aretz? So this was a major machlokas among the poskim. The Mabit, the Marmi Rutenberg, and the Pasal Shulchan, they all assume that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a bigger priority, and that we don't do Kibud Av V'Aim when it means not observing halachic obligations, and the parents themselves have an obligation to live in Eretz Yisrael. Mm-hmm. Others disagreed. The Tashbetz lists Kibud Av V'Aim as one of the reasons that it's legitimate to leave Eretz Yisrael. It's a Safik in the Chayyadim and others, and this was something that Poskim took different approaches to. Ravadji Yosef, in his Tshuva Sicha Avedas, says that Eretz Yisrael is Shekula Kenegar Kol HaMitzvos, and that has to take priority, and one can only leave only temporarily. This is a part of a larger machlokas, the question about the nature of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, whether it's a mitzvah that is obligatory mitzvah, mitzvah chiyuvis, or whether you say, like Rav Moshe Feinstein understood, it's more of a mitzvah kiyumis. So there's a lot of discussion about this position, about this tshuva, and about some of the details here. You know, it could be that even if you say that you should only leave a daita to go back, but that might be a long time. Maybe it doesn't have to necessarily mean immediately. It could be once everything is no longer pressing as far as the parents are concerned. Or also the svara that some of the earlier svarim had mentioned, the parents themselves have a chiyuv to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's not always possible. It may not necessarily be a realistic option. And then what? And also many of these poskim were writing about people who were already in Eretz Yisrael. So presumably if a person is already in Chutz La'aretz, so maybe that should be a different story. So the Panim Yafos, so Rabbi of the Chasam Sofer, is the author of the Sefer Afla, so he writes over here in Parshas Lech Lecha, is a discussion about this, and he's machalik between those who are already in Chutz La'aretz, who should stay to take care of their parents, he understood, as opposed to those who are in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Yosef Lieberman, not to be confused with the senator, the postdoc, the author of the Tshuvas Mishnas Yosef, he has a tshuva about this, and he tends towards the assumption that it's a mitzvah kiyumis, and that therefore kibud av v'em should presumably be a higher priority. And he writes in terms of leaving Eretz Yisrael, nowadays we leave Eretz Yisrael, he goes through for a lot of other reasons that don't rise to the level of kibud av v'em. It's hard to say that that's not as good of a justification as all the other reasons people do it. This is obviously a complex discussion which requires a lot more personal consideration in every case. This has a lot of overlap with the discussion of kibud av v'em and marriage choice, which is a whole other discussion we could talk about at a different time if you'd like. But I'll say, for now, it's not the kind of discussion that should be made by, a decision that should be made by just pointing to one sack or the other. It's clearly got a lot of individual factors and complexities, and for everyone it's a very personal discussion. But just to take note of the fact that there were those who debated this issue specifically surrounding this pasuk and this medrash and what exactly are its implications, and there's a significant literature around this medrash and also around the Gemara Maseches Kedushin and the Flamed Aleph Mid Beis, where the Gemara talks about Ravasi. It's also a complicated story if you look at the details there. But Ravasi ended up in Eretz Yisrael, leaving his elderly mother in Chutz La'aretz, and then he heard that she was coming, and he had a debate whether he should go greet her, and he wasn't sure whether he should leave Eretz Yisrael or not, and he got different answers, the whole back and forth in the Gemara, and then it turns out that it was her Arum that was coming, that she had already passed away, and that that was what was being brought, and he says, I wouldn't have come. So that's the whole question, what exactly to derive from that Gemara. Again, it's a major discussion, but just to make note, Rabbi Willig wrote an article many years ago, and gave a share many years ago, where he noted that Kibud av v'em has, as the Mechas Chinuch and others brought up the discussion, Kibud av v'em has components of mitzvos ben adam l'chaveru and ben adam l'makom. So when you look at it from a perspective of ben adam l'chaveru, so then essentially it's like a shibud, it's like a debt that you have to somebody else. Your parents took care of you, you should take care of them, etc. So if you have a debt to somebody else, so let's say, if you imagine, let's say somebody wants to make aliyah. So, you know, it's expensive to make aliyah. It's not an easy thing financially. So let's say somebody borrows a lot of money in America and he's in big debt. And then he decides, okay, well, I got a mitzvah to make aliyah, so I'm going to just jump off to Eretz Yisrael and I'll leave all these people hanging. So that presumably wouldn't be right. Presumably he has a chovos he has to fill first, and then he can figure out how to work out aliyah. So here also, if a person has a shibud to their parents, it becomes a much more complicated question. You can't just simply say, okay, I have this personal mitzvah I'd like to fulfill, because he also has this shibud that has to be considered. But that, he assumes, is specifically when the parents are alive. So then there's the ben adam l'chaveru component of servicing them the way they serviced you, etc., etc. But in the context of the Gemara, so the parents had already, the mother had already passed away. So it says, the idea that the Gemara says that this kibud av v'em after the parents are no longer alive as well, says that's a, there's a lot of lumdus to say about this that's way outside of the scope of our brief time today. We could talk about this in much greater detail. But that the obligation of kavod to a parent who is no longer alive, which the Gemara clearly says exists, but nonetheless many understand that it's of a different nature. It's not really comparable to the kavod that a parent who is alive is supposed to receive. So Rabbi Willig understood that that's purely a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, that that is basically about showing honor to the parents who are partners in your creation, partners with a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So it's a way of indirect honor to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's a different kind of mitzvah than the parents who are alive, which is a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveru. And that has a larger role to play in conflict with something like Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so in any event, so Avram is told to leave. There's a lot of drashas on these words here. V'yomer shem Avram lech lecha me'aretzcha me'olaretcha beis avicha l'aretz asher areka. The whole idea of leaving different settings and different contexts that have different degrees of impact on you. So the Darshanim have said much about this, about what's your land, the place you were born, the household of your father, etc., etc. Rabbi Geltzeller in his Drasha mentioned before, was talking about the unique nisyonos of every individual, also has quite a lot to say about the impact of all of these different words. And the pasuk ends, you go to where I'm going to show you, which is mysterious. And that's also a part of the Nisayan, as many Sfarim point out, that a trip is always easier if you have some sense, as every little kid knows, are we there yet, are we there yet, are we there yet, when you have some sense of how long it's going to be, so you can handle a trip much more easily. But if someone says, just go, and I'll tell you where to go, it's much harder to handle the trip. So the Lev Avram writes that the idea of L'hanascha L'tavascha, the idea that it's going to be for your own good, so you know, one could ask that, is this really what a tzaddik needs, especially we're talking about a nisayon? So why does he have to be told that it's going to be good for him? He should just be told to go. So he understood, the Lev Avram, that the point is, no, you should act as if it was something that you want to do for your own benefit. Ultimately it is, but it's very hard for you to appreciate that, and especially when you're not even told where you're going. So a person who decides he wants to go somewhere, so he's very excited to go there, and he knows how long it's going to take, and he knows that he wants to go to that place. So it's easy for him to appreciate that trip. But if somebody does not choose on his own to go somewhere, and he has no idea how long it's going to take, and he doesn't know where it is, so then to be able to have a positive attitude towards that kind of trip is much harder. And so that's the Nisayan, that he should be able to appreciate that and recognize that, even though it's not really fitting the model that would normally accompany that kind of a journey. Okay, so the next pasuk tells us, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name big, and you will be a bracha. So here again, you find a lot of language that's susceptible, that's used for Jewish. You know, first of all, Eschol Gadol doesn't say, I will make a great nation from you. I will make you into a great nation. You, the individual, will be a great nation somehow. And the Darshanim explain that the kochas of the whole nation are included within Avraham Avinu. And that he, the idea that he will be a bracha, so the Rishonim have different interpretation, meaning you will be a bracha. So the Rashi says it means you'll be able to give a bracha to others. The Ramban says people will use your name for brachas, so you should be like Avram, etc. Others understand it just as an expression of success. You'll have success in everything, but it could also be that you will be the bracha, you will be the role model for everybody. You are going to contain everything within you that this nation is supposed to represent. And that's itself the bracha. The idea of him containing everything. So the Gemara says in Bava Kamma, we didn't get there last year, but in Sari Zayin and Mibayz, the Gemara says that there was a coin that was made at that time that had two sides. One side was an old couple, one side it was a young couple, representing Avram and Sarah. And the Paris Yosef quotes an explanation that there's an advantage to every stage of life, that people who are youthful have more energy and more passion, perhaps, and people who are older have more wisdom and more yishuv hadas, and Avram represents the balance, that he was somebody who had all of those midos together, and that's what this coin was supposed to represent. And the idea of asa'escha l'gai gadol v'arechacha, so the Gemara Maseches Pesachim, Adav Kufi Zayin Amid Beis, as a drasha on all of these words, v'abe'escha, v'arechacha, goy gadol, it's a reference to how we say in Shmon Esrei, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, but the chasima is only on Avram. We close with just Avram's name in that bracha. So it's an interesting point why that is. But Geltzeller in the same drasha, or actually in another drasha right after it, so he understands that the Chasima is uniquely with Avraham Avinu because Chesed that he represents is the Midah that endures beyond everything. So every other Koach is secondary to that of Chesed, which takes us through all of the challenges of history. But nonetheless, we still do mention all the Avos at the beginning of Shmona Esrei, and each one gets its own Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. The Shuvas Panim Iris, Chelek Aleph, and Simon Lametes, he points out that we still identify each one with his own reference to a Kaddish Baruch Hu's name, because the notion of one's personal chakira, one's personal investigation with Amunah, is still highlighted as very significant and very crucial, and that's one of the aspects that we want to confront when we start Shmona Esrei. Shmona Esrei Tefillah is also our very own independent encounter with Ribbono Shel Olam. So we call attention to the fact that Avram had his own encounter, and Yitzchak had his own encounter, and Yaakov had his own encounter, and all of that is able to be a model for us. So it's an interesting discussion if you look in the Torah Tamima about whether anyone else beyond the Avos gets the title of Elokei so-and-so. Do we say Elokei Mori, Elokei Zayim? Do we have the usage anywhere in Tanakh or potentially in Tanakh with other individuals? My grandfather, Mishiv Nefesh, took some issue with some of his proofs. It's a discussion whether this is something that is unique to the Avos specifically. And then the next pasuk continues with similar ideas. So those who bless you get blessed, those who curse you get cursed, and everyone will be blessed through you. So we have this idea that people who are able to give brachos get brachos. The Gemara in Sot indicates the Kohen, who's Mevarech Hasam, he gets brachos. And the Gemara in Maseches Brachos on Daf Nun Hey Amud Aleph says that when one is given the coast to bench, he shouldn't turn down the coast because it's a bad sign for him. His life will be impacted. And the Torah Tamim explains there that normally it's the guest who gets to bench in the household because he's supposed to bless the host. So if he says he doesn't want to bless the host, so then that's what this pasuk is indicating. You bless others, you get blessed. You don't want to bless others, it's not going to work out so well for you. Same kind of idea. Okay, so to skip around a little bit, Vayelech Avram Kasher Tiber Elav Hashem, Vayelech Ito Lot. So he went to glow with him, Avram Bechamei Shanim, Vishim Shanim, Betseisum Echaron. So Avram was 75 years old. So Avram this nefesh ha'sharasu v'charan, some explain that this is really the big introduction that Avram gets, that this is the big statement of his accomplishment, even though it's presented here in kind of a subtle way, very non-explicit way. But this refers, as Chazal explained, to all of the kiruv that he did. To all of the people he made, so to speak, Nefesh Asher Asu, is all the Torah he was spreading, which was not the actual Torah yet. We don't have Jews yet. Right? So you'll sometimes ask, what happened to all the descendants of these people? Where are they as far as the Jewish nation is concerned? And there are different approaches as to what happened to them. But part of it is that Avram was not spreading Judaism particularly. He wasn't necessarily Jewish. It's actually a big discussion among Rav Yosef Engel, actually, has a lot about this in a Sefer Beis Otzar. Mishlo Melech has a lot about this in a Sefer Andrashos. The Parashas Drachim, the question of whether the Avos were Jewish or not. Do we assume that Torah given at Har Sinai is the beginning of the Jewish people? So there was no Judaism before that. So as much as we love and revere our ancestors, but with all due respect to them, they weren't actually Jewish, Avraham and Yaakov. Or do we say that, no, that they were Jewish? And it's an interesting question whether it matters or not. What's Nafkamina? So you could read Rav Yosef Engel's discussion in the Beis Otzer and the Parashas Drachim to see quite a bit about this. But the people who Avram was connecting to here, we don't have to say necessarily that they were Jewish. that he was spreading what's known as ethical monotheism, that primarily the recognition of one God, that there is one power in the world, and that we should live a life of ethical behavior and of chesed and the like. So that's the message that he was spreading. It doesn't necessarily mean that the people were becoming Jewish, or that even he was Jewish. But in any event, this is on some level Torah. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Tes Amud Aleph, the Gemara says that the idea of 2,000 years of Torah that the Gemara talks about, so that starts here. So essentially, here you find that Avram was beginning the world of Torah, so to speak, through this creation of people. And that's very significant. So this is 2,000 years into the world's history. And that's a major benchmark as far as the development of the world and development of Torah is concerned. So to skip a little bit towards the end of the Aliyah, so we see that the Pasuk Yud tells us Vahi Rav Ba'aretz Vayeir Avram Mitzrayim Ala Gorsham Ki Kaved HaRav Ba'aretz. So there was a famine in the land and Avram went down. So okay, so he went down because he was starving, because it was a famine. The Ramban over here in his commentary is very, very critical of Avram. He said this was wrong. This was a chisaron and bitachon. It's hard to reconcile that with some other ideas, especially since he's passing the Nisyonos here. Not everyone agrees with the Ramban's interpretation of the Maral and the Gevuras Hashem. He takes issue with the Ramban, and Ziv points out that the Kaved Alav Harav seems to say that he did everything he could until it was just impossible to stick it out. And the Gemara even says in Bava Kamma that if a person is in a place of famine, he should leave that place. So it's hard to know exactly how to relate to the Ramban's comments here. Simchus Aslobroit Nassam Derech, he writes that it's part of the idea that we assume that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't act unjustly. So therefore, Avram must have done something wrong. Rav Schwab, in his comments, Rav Schwab understands that Avram, if he'd just been by himself, he wouldn't have necessarily have gone down to Mitzrayim because of this, but he had the responsibility for all these people who were around him now, all the nefesh. So that was why he was going down. But that's also where the criticism was, because maybe he could have lifted them up. Maybe he could have help them to appreciate and that they could have a stronger emunah also. Rabbi Bezalel Radinsky has discussion about this in a sefer Mishkan Bezalel. And he quotes from the Dubner Magid. And there is a theme here that it's important to appreciate that when you have one strong person in a crowd, so that person can have a big impact on everyone else. And when you have one weak person in the crowd, that one person can have an impact on everyone else. So this is important to appreciate, and some understand, so maybe that's the criticism here, that maybe Avram could have done more to inspire these people around him who he was worried about, that they could have had the emunah to stick it out. So in any event, so the psukim get a little more surprising towards the end of the Aliyah. It says, "He kasher hikri of lavo mitzrayim of yomer el sarai yishto hinene yadadik ishi yifas marat." I now realize that you're a beautiful woman. Hard to understand exactly what he means by saying I realize that now, but I'm concerned. V'haya kiro sachem mitzrim. I'm worried the Egyptians are going to see you. V'amro ishto zos v'hargu osi v'osach yichayu. They're going to think that okay, you're my wife. So they'll have to kill me in order to take you. So here, just to give a little synergy to what we were talking about recently this year, it's a tangential point perhaps, but some of the Mepharshim ask, so why are they going to kill him? They're going to kill him because they're makbar an eshes ish, because they don't want to take a woman who's married to a living person. So I, but the Shev Mitzvah Noach, prohibit murder also. So why are they okay with killing him, but not okay with Eishes Ish? So some suggest, a little bit similar to what we spoke about the Nevela on Shabbos, the Nevela or Chilul Shabbos, that to kill him would just be a one-time thing, so it would be over. But to take an Eishes Ish with a husband still alive, that would be an ongoing bizayon. So the whole quantity-quality issue that we spoke about, that becomes a bigger issue. And then we have this last pasuk of the Aliyah where he has, where especially with Rashi, there's a surprising line, Imrina chosiat l'mani tavli ba'avarech v'chayso nafshi b'gualeich. So here he says to him, he says to her, you should say that you are my sister, so that'll be a plan. And here the Ramban again is down on Avram. He says that that's also his mistake. He should have had emunah and a Kadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to save him. So the Chasam Sofer says, you know, that's the point, that because according to the Ramban himself, he already did the wrong thing, so maybe he's worried that he doesn't have enough worthiness to be saved, so therefore he has to come out with a strategy. That's the point. This is an act of tshuva for the lack of bitachon, he understood. The Tur comments here, comments about this, that they would have killed him if he had said it was his wife. So the Chizkuni notes that he could have said, or maybe his plan was, that he would say that she is the wife of somebody else. He's his sister and the wife of somebody else. So then somebody who's not there, they're not going to be able to kill that guy because he's far away. So that will help. And that's perhaps relevant to understanding the very baffling Rashi, which really seems so surprising, that Laman Yitavli, that it should work out well for me on your sake. So Rashi says, just simply, Yidnuli Matanas, they'll give me gifts. So is this some kind of a plan to enrich himself? Especially, we know that's not Avram's attitude at all on any level. The whole Rashi is very hard to understand. So some of the other Mefarshim understand that it's not that he wants the money, but that this is a part of his plan to stall, that if they think he's her brother and that they need to kind of acquire her from him, but she's not married to him, but they need to butter him up, so then that will be a whole process. They'll make offers, he'll refuse, he'll stall, and then eventually he'll be able to escape. So maybe that's what it means. It doesn't mean that he's interested in profiting. It means that this is a part of the plan, that this will create a whole different kind of discussion. While other Rishonim say differently than Rashi, other Rishonim say it just means that he will be saved. But that's the point, that because he'll say that she's the sister rather than the wife, so then it'll be good for him in the direct sense, that they'll be saved and they'll be able to escape. Okay, we have to escape because we're over time, so we will stop here. Stay tuned for what time Shir is on Sunday, and I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos.